deadly truth. Then Vonetta raised her hand and opened her mouth and had the world looking and laughing at us. Except for the boy who was too dizzy to laugh. I wasn't about to add fuel to the fire by asking questions about things that I should know, like my mother's name. Crazy Mother Mountain. After the program ended for the day, we stayed out as long as we could. By 6 o'clock, we were hungry. Whether she liked it or not, Cecile had to let us inside her green stucco house. When she opened the door, all she said was, "You back?" Then she spread the tablecloth on the floor and brought out shrimp lo mein and egg rolls from the kitchen. She'd probably gone out to Mean Lady Ming's while we were at the center. We washed up and sat Indian style around the food. I said the blessing and then I asked, "Why the Black Panthers call you Inzilla?" No use letting my curiosity go itching. If I had to ask someone, I might as well go straight to the mountain. The Crazy Mother Mountain. She gave me a blank stare, like I said something wrong. Then she corrected me. "Inzilla." In place of shrugs, my sisters and I shot one another glances. That was not a Brooklyn sound, or an Alabama sound. It was probably not even an honest-to-goodness Oakland sound. Instead of trying it out, I said, "Why they call you that?" My sisters followed. "Isn't your name Cecile?" "Yeah, Cecile." She said, "My name is Inzilla. Inzilla is a poet's name. My poems blow the dust off surfaces to make clear and true paths. Inzilla." I gave her a plain stare, plain and blank. It might as well have been an eye roll. She probably hated my father's plain face on me. That the plain way about him was the plain way about me. I didn't know about blowing dust and clearing paths. I knew about hot combing thick heads of hair and ironing pleated wool skirts for school. She said, "It's Yoruba for the path." I knew better than to roll my eyes at her so-called name and where she said it came from. Instead, I asked her where Yoruba was. She quickly told me it was a people, a nation, in the land of our ancestors. Vonetta asked, "You mean Prattville, Alabama?" This time, I wouldn't kick Vonetta. Good old Vonetta. Prattville was where Papa and Big Ma were originally from. They weren't from big city Mobile, Montgomery, or Selma, but from Prattville. And truth be told, my daddy and my grandmama came from a one-cow town rubbing next to Prattville. They just said Prattville because it was more known. I asked, "So you can change your name anytime you want to?" Vonetta, "To anything you want to?" Fern, "To anything you can spell?" Cecile said, "It's my name, myself. I can name myself. And if I'm not the one I was, but am now a new self, why would I call myself by my old name?" Then I said, "If you keep changing your name, how will people know you or your poems?" When my sisters and I speak, one right after the other, it's like a song we sing, a game we play. We never need to pass signals. We just fire off, rat-a-tat-tat-tat. Delphine, Vonetta, Fern. Me. "Suppose you got famous for writing poems." Vonetta. "Then everyone knew your name." Fern. "And you couldn't hide." She said, "My poems aren't about that. Fame-seeking poems. They're the people's art." Although yesterday she didn't want to have anything to do with the people. I said, "What if all the people could recite all of your poems?" Vonetta. "And they said them on the radio." Fern. "And you became famous." Me. "You couldn't hide then." Fern. "Surely couldn't." She said, "Who y'all working for? I think y'all working for the man undercover. The FBI.
the COINTELPRO. I knew about the FBI from the Sunday night show and from the news, but who were the COINTELPRO?
Cecile knew she had us baffled and took control of the talk like she had grabbed both the ball and the jacks.
Oh, they're slick, all right, she said. The feds hire midgets to front as kids. They infiltrate families with long-lost cousins who don't look a thing like you, but you take them in because that's how colored folks do. And before you can say, way down home, your long-lost kin are documenting your every move for the weekly secret meetings with a man.
Family don't tell on family, I said.
Not real family.
Surely don't.
That's what you think, Cecile said.
She went after Vonetta first, because Vonetta was needy in a way that Fern and I weren't. Her eyes stayed wide and fearful.
They get you alone. Alone and scared. They say, Vonetta Gaither, do you love your country? Do you love your father? Your sisters? Your Uncle Darnell in Vietnam and Big Ma in Brooklyn?
At Fern she aimed.
Little girl, do you love your doll baby? Do you love Captain Kangaroo? Your kindergarten teacher, graham crackers, and story time? Well, if you want to keep all that safe, tell us all you know about the person named Cecile Johnson, also known as your mother.
Fern said her name was not Little Girl, that she was going into the second grade and that she watched Mighty Mouse and not Captain Kangaroo. Before Cecile got to me, I said, they don't ask kids nothing. No one listens to kids.
If this was Red China, they would. The Red Chinese Communist Party don't play. Kids younger than that little girl turn their mother and father over to the Reds for treason and re-education.
We're not in Red China, I told her. To that, she only grunted like, that's what you think. Everyone knows the King of the Sea. I didn't care what Cecile called her new self or how much dust she blew off paths with her poems. She was Cecile Johnson to me, and I didn't appreciate her so-called new self or her new name.
A name is important. It isn't something you drop in the litter basket or on the ground. Your name is how people know you. The very mention of your name makes a picture spring to mind, whether it's a picture of clashing fists or a mighty mountain that can't be knocked down. Your name is who you are and how you're known even when you do something great or something dumb.
Cecile had no trouble dreaming up names for us. I'll bet ours were names she meant for us to keep and not throw away when we decided we had had enough of our old selves. According to Uncle Darnell and Big Ma, she had had a name ready for Fern, but Papa said,
no more of those made-up different names.
So Cecile gave Fern some of her milk, put her in her crib, stood over her for a while, and was gone. Although no one thinks I can, I remember a time when smoke filled the house. Not coffin smoke, but smoke from a woman's smooth voice singing, with piano, bass, and drums. All together, these sounds made smoke. Uncle Darnell would say,
you can't remember that. You were 2, 3, maybe.
But I do. I still see, hear, and feel bits and flashes. The sounds of musical smoke. My head on Cecile's big belly. Uncle Darnell said the Vaughn in Vonetta came from the Vaughn in the singer Sarah Vaughn's name. And when Uncle played the albums Cecile had left behind, the ones with piano, bass, drums, and smooth-voiced Sarah Vaughn, in my mind, smoke still filled the house. Cecile could go changing her name at the sight of rain, but I was going to stay Delphine, even after I learned the truth about my name. Even that wasn't enough to make me drop my name. My name was the one thing I didn't have to share with another soul in my school. In my last class, 3 Deborahs, 2 Lindas, 2 Jameses, 3 Michaels, and 2 Moniques shared their names. There was also 1 Anthony, whose mama could spell, and 1 Antony, whose mama couldn't.
It was no secret they too shared a name. If you hollered Anthony, Antony, or Aunt, both boys' heads turned. My name was my own, and I couldn't imagine that anyone else had it in all of Brooklyn. No matter where we went, Coney Island, Prospect Park, or Shiloh Baptist Church, there was only one Delphine. I never thought about what Delphine meant or if it had a meaning at all. It was just my name. Delphine had a groan sound like it was waiting for me to slide into it, like a grown woman slides into a mink coat and clips on ruby earrings. I figured since Cecile didn't have a mink coat or ruby earrings to give me when I grew up, she had dreamed up a name that I would grow into. It was one thing Cecile got right. There was no slice or drop of it that I had to share with my sisters. Then that stupid show had to come on television. The one about the dolphin that saves everyone's lives and corrals the bad guys until the sheriff arrives. At recess or on the school bus, especially on Wednesdays, the day after the TV show came on, the boys would all sing, "They call him Flipper, Flipper, faster than lightning," or something like that. Then they'd start pushing at me to speak in dolphin. Alice Carter had been the chief flipper singer and whistler on one particular Wednesday. I'd beaten him up real good. I'd made sure it was as unforgettable a beating as I could give him so it would burn in the minds of all the other flipper singers and whistlers. When I got home from school, my knuckles still sore from Alice Carter's jaw, I told Vonetta and Fern to change their clothes. Hang them up neatly. That would save me from ironing them that night. I told them to start their homework and I'd be back in exactly 20 minutes to help them if they needed it. I'd told Big Ma I had to get a book from the library and I would be right back. Then I marched to that library to find out for myself. I'd gone straight to the biggest dictionary in the reference section. This was a dictionary so huge you needed both hands to manage turning the pages and making the book stay put. Good old Merriam-Webster. I trusted Merriam because I thought, instead of having children she didn't want, she wrote the dictionary. She didn't have anything else better to do, probably didn't have sisters and brothers to see after, which was why she knew every word in the world. Big Ma would have said Merriam might as well be useful. I turned to the back section, turned past the Z words, past the phases of the moon and the metric system, and finally to the given names. I flipped a few pages to get to the female D names. Then I turned and thumbed past Daisy, Daphne, Deanna, Deborah, Della, Dolores. And there it was. The name I had been sure Cecile had dreamed up while she stared out the window as musical smoke blew through the house. There it was. In a book. Broken down into two syllables, spelled exactly the same. There it was. My name. Delphine. My nostrils had flared. My breathing raced. My heart pounded not only in my chest, but throughout my body. This changed everything. My mother hadn't reached into her poetic soul and dreamt me up a name. My mother had given me a name that already was, which meant she hadn't given me a thing. Not one thing. How could this be when a woman's deep, smoky voice planted Vonetta's name in Cecile's mind? How could this be when Cecile dreamed up a name for Fern so marvelous that the idea of not being able to give it caused her to up and leave us? I didn't need to ask any further. The proof was right there. I shared my name with some other Delphine. And she, just like I, according to Miss Merriam-Webster, had been named for a dolphin under the sea. All this time I've been holding my head up, feeling superior to Ellis, Willie, Robert, James, the Michaels, Anthony, and Antony because they were stupid boys. My knuckles still smarted from socking Ellis Carter in the jaw while he had been telling the truth. I had been named for a dolphin. A big fishy mammal with a wide grin. Learning the full truth about my name had been more than I could bear. The librarian got up from her desk and put a Kleenex in my hand. I hadn't even known I'd been making a grand Negro spectacle out of myself, bawling over a word in the dictionary. The following week, when Flipper came on, I gotten up and turned the television set off. Vonetta and Fern bleated like billy goats, but I'd done what I always did and distracted them. I'd said, "Tonight is game and cookie night." I brought out the Candyland game, poured the milk, and piled a nice stack of Oreos on a plate. I hadn't cared if I never saw that grinning mammal again. Coloring and Lala. The next morning, Vonetta, Fern, clutching Miss Patty Cake, and I left the green stucco house and went to the center, where we stood on line until the doors opened for breakfast, because Cecile wouldn't cook for us in her kitchen. While we ate hot oatmeal and sliced bananas, a truck from a local store pulled up and dropped off loaves of bread and crates of orange juice. Within minutes, the smell of toasted bread filled the center and small cartons of orange juice were placed on our trays. The young white guys who delivered the bread and orange juice knew the Panthers. They stayed a while and chatted with them. I had my eyes on them the whole time, waiting for something to happen. I felt silly once I realized all I was watching was talking and laughing. When Sister Pat came around with a basket full of toast, I grabbed two pieces, one for me and one for Fern. Vonetta, who was buddying up to one of the three sisters, could get her own toast. It wasn't at all the way the television showed militants. That's what they called the Black Panthers. Militants, who from the newspapers were angry fist wavers with their mouths wide open and their rifles ready for shooting. They never showed anyone like Sister Makumbu or Sister Pat, passing out toast and teaching in classrooms. I started to think, this place is all right. I watched the white guys leave unharmed, laughing even. I couldn't wait to tell Big Ma all about it. Then I heard Crazy Kelvin say, "That's the least that the racist dogs can do." And just like that, he spoiled what I thought I knew. When we entered the classroom, we found the chairs and tables had been pushed to one side of the room. In the middle of the floor were white posters covered with outlines of wavy writing. We stood on the edges of the room surrounding the posters, like we were on dry land and the posters were floating out to sea. Sister Makumbu motioned us in.
"Sisters and brothers, find a poster to color in. You can work alone or you can work with a partner."
I looked out to sea. The letters outlined in black marker said things like, "Justice for all power to all of the people, remember little Bobby, free Huey." I had seen Huey Newton on the evening news wearing his black beret and using his big words. Big Ma called him the main trouble stirrer because he was the leader of the Black Panthers. The only famous Bobby I knew was Bobby Kennedy. Even though Bobby Kennedy had been killed, I didn't think the Black Panthers wanted us to remember Bobby Kennedy. They were talking about some other Bobby, a little Bobby. And I wondered if he had been killed like Bobby Kennedy, why else would they want us to remember him if he were still alive? Sister Makumbu said,
"Yesterday we learned revolution means change, and that we can all be revolutionaries."
As she spoke, we stepped carefully between the posters, choosing one and then plopping down next to it. Sister Pat passed around a bucket of magic markers and crayons. Part of me felt like repeating Vonetta's words. We didn't come for the revolution, we came for breakfast. But part of me wanted to see what it was all about. That part reached into the bucket for a thick magic marker. Vonetta and Fern each took crayons. Fern took an extra crayon for Miss Patty Cake. I decided on the Free Huey poster since I didn't know who little Bobby was. Fern and I squatted down by our poster. Next to Fern sat Miss Patty Cake with her arms reaching out. I chose the right poster. Fern colors small and snail-like. There was no need to grab the sign with a lot of letters, since it would be just the two of us coloring. Instead of sticking with us, Vonetta ran over to the middle Engton girl, that was their last name, Engton, and began coloring with her and her younger sister. I couldn't say I was surprised. Then I heard the middle Engton girl say, "What's wrong with your little sister?" Vonetta tried to act like she hadn't heard and kept coloring the P in power. "Why she run around with her dolly?" Vonetta, who is loud and showy, showy and crowy, had to swallow her words. "She likes it, that's all." Vonetta now sounded low and small, and it served her right. I watched Fern move her crayon in small black circles. I could hear her singing la 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 to herself. I recognized the tune. It was the la 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 part in a song that used to come on the radio. When Brenda and the Tabulation sang Dry Your Eyes, my sisters and I imagined they sang about a mother who had to leave her children. It was the only real indulgence we allowed ourselves in missing having a mother. Brenda and the Tabulations, Vonetta, Fern, and I sang Dry Your Eyes whenever the disc jockey played it on WWRL. So I sang the la 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 part with Fern, making a nice wall around us to keep that laughing Engton girl on the outside. We all have our la 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 song, the thing we do when the world isn't singing a nice tune to us. We sing our own nice tune to drown out ugly. Fern and I colored and sang, but the middle Engton girl was determined to break through our la 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 wall. She had her own song and made sure we heard it. "Your sister is a baby, your sister is a baby." I expected Vonetta to do what we always do, fight back, talk back, pick up a crayon and scoot over near Fern and me. Vonetta sat in a small heap of herself, looking smaller and smaller, letting that Engton girl sing "Your Sister is a Baby," merrily, merrily, merrily. I stopped filling in Free Huey. I turned and said, "Shut up," to Vonetta's friend. She stopped singing. That was all it took. And that made me even angrier at Vonetta. She could have done that much for her own sister. The oldest Engton girl rose up from her Justice for All sign. She said to me, "You can't tell my sister to shut up." I gave her a full-out neck roll. I just did. It didn't matter that she was almost as tall as I was and could have been a seventh grader. It was too late to take anything back, even if I'd wanted to. Sister Makumba was right there and ended it before it grew into anything to stop. She reminded us we had greater causes to fight for than to fight with each other. "Sister Eunice, Sister Delphine, shake hands." We begrudgingly shook hands, then returned to our posters. I felt some shame, but I wasn't about to wear it. I was still too mad at Vonetta to be thoroughly ashamed. On the way to Cecile's green stucco house, I said, "You're supposed to take up for Fern." "Yeah," Fern said. Vonetta said, "I'm tired of taking up for Fern." Fern said, just to have something to say back, "I'm tired of taking up for you." Vonetta said, "You don't take up for me." "Do too." "Do not." "Too." "Not." "I do too." "Like when?" "When you broke the little blue teacup. I could have told." "Big deal," Vonetta said. Then she added the Engton girl's word to let us know who she sided with. "Big deal, baby." Fern banged her fist at her sides and was set to leap on Vonetta, but I grabbed her in mid-jump. "Y'all just stop it." Fern was near tears mad.
I'm gonna tell.
Who you gonna tell? Cecile? She don't care about a blue teacup. Big Ma? Papa? They're miles and miles away. And we don't have enough dimes. Who you gonna tell?
I said, shut up, Vonetta.
And she shut up. That was all it took. I had planned for us to kill time playing in the park until Cecile would let us in the house. But playing in the park meant playing together. Vonetta and Fern weren't ready to play together. I had to keep my sisters apart, so instead we went to the library. Vonetta read her books at one table, and Fern and I read Henry and Ribsy at the next table. When we got to Cecile's, we put our things, including Miss Pattycake, away in our room. I asked Cecile for some money for dinner, and Fern and I went out to pick up chop suey from Ming's. Vonetta didn't want to go, she said, and that was fine with Fern and me. We came back from Mean Lady Ming's, who wasn't really so mean, but we gotten used to calling her that. I kept the 2 dimes from the change to save up for our phone call. I was sure we'd need at least $1 in change. Cecile wouldn't miss 2 dimes. If she asked for them, I'd give them to her, although I didn't think she'd ask. We spread out the tablecloth on the floor and loaded up our plates. I said the blessing and we ate. Vonetta suddenly became Chatty Cathy all through dinner. I figured she'd had enough of being apart from Fern and me and was now glad we were all together. But it was too much Chatty Cathy for Cecile, who told Vonetta to stop disturbing the silence and that quiet was a good thing. To that, Vonetta started humming that song on the radio that goes, "Silence is golden, but my eyes still see." Cecile couldn't figure out how Vonetta was hers. Before Cecile did something crazy, I gave Vonetta the look and she stopped humming. After dinner, we headed for our room while Cecile put everything away. For once, I didn't care that she wouldn't let us in the kitchen where her papers hung like wings. I didn't mind not having to wash dishes or mop the kitchen floor. This was the order that we entered the room. Fern first, me next, and Vonetta last. I should have known something was amiss by the way Vonetta lagged behind. Fern and I soon learned why. Chatty Cathy hadn't missed the company of her sisters. Chatty Cathy had been up to dirty tricks. A black magic marker lay on the floor, the same kind I used to color in Free Huey. Vonetta had gone over Miss Patty Cake with the black magic marker, leaving pink lips and pink rouge circles peeking out on a once white face. To tell the truth, Miss Patty Cake was never as white as the day Fern got her. After enough biting, dragging around, and loving up, Miss Patty Cake was off-white, or light-skinned, as Fern would say. As it was, Miss Patty Cake was a long way from her pinkish-white self. Fern screamed, louder than she'd screamed on the Coney Island Ferris wheel, louder and longer than she'd screamed when the dentist stuck her with a Novocaine needle. Fern's fists never made it to a ball. She screamed and threw her body into Vonetta like a missile flying into outer space. Vonetta and Fern fought all the time, but not like this. Cecile burst into the room and pulled them apart. That was the first time she'd touched either one of them. She turned to me. "Why'd you let them fight like this?" I didn't say anything. I just wanted her to come in here and act like a mother. A real one. "Answer me, Delphine." I raised my shoulders up and set them back down. That was my answer. "And you, Vonetta, what do you call this?" She held up her black scrawled grandbaby to Vonetta's face. "No wonder you couldn't stop lip flapping." To Fern, she said, "You're too big for this anyway." But Cecile didn't offer Fern a hug. She didn't bend down and wipe Fern's tears. She still didn't call Fern by her name. counting and skimming. I took a bar of ivory soap and one of Cecile's washcloths and scrubbed away at the black ink scrawled all over Miss Pattycake. Big Ma taught me to be a hard washboard scrubber, to not accept dirt, dust, or stains on clothes, floors, or walls, or on ourselves.
Scrub like you're a gal from a one-cow town near Prattville, Alabama,
she'd tell me while Vonetta and Fern ran around and played.
Can't have you dreaming out of your head and writing on the walls. That only lead to ruin.
I grabbed Miss Pattycake's dimpled arms and chubby legs. I went after her cheeks and forehead. I scrubbed every blacked-up piece of plastic, wearing down that ivory bar from a nearly full cake to nearly half flat. I scrubbed and scrubbed until my knuckles ached. It was quite a job. When Vonetta picked up that black magic marker, she had been determined to make Miss Pattycake as black and proud as Crazy Kelvin wanted her to be. I soon found it didn't matter if I scrubbed like a gal from a one-count town or if I gave up on ivory soap and turned to stronger cleaners. While the heavy-duty cleaners and scouring pad lifted the black from the white bathroom sink, Miss Pattycake's body was another story. The magic marker ink seeped down into Miss Pattycake's soft plastic skin. At best, the Ajax, Pine Sol, and scouring pad left Miss Pattycake gray, scratched up, and strong-smelling. Hard scrubbing or not, there was nothing more I could do. Miss Pattycake would never be Fern's baby doll the way she'd been as long as anyone could remember. I shook all the water from her insides, dried her off, then put her in my suitcase to spare Fern from seeing her doll baby grayish and ashy. I was too tired to try to make this thing between Vonetta and Fern wilt away. This wasn't exactly fighting over who gets the gold crayon or the last cookie. I knew better than to look for help from Cecile. Worn out, I began to see things like Big Ma did. There was no point in flying us across the country for next to no mothering. I just kept counting down the days. The best that I could do was keep Vonetta and Fern separated. Vonetta bathed by herself, and Fern bathed with me. Vonetta slept on the top of the daybed, and Fern slept with me below. Fern no longer looked for her doll when we left Cecile's for breakfast. I wouldn't say Vonetta did Fern any favor, but maybe things worked out the way they had to. Still, Vonetta remained proudly defiant, walking two steps ahead of us and then leaving us all together once her new friends, the Angtons, were in sight. She and Janice, the middle Angton, threw pebbles at Hirohito Woods and fussed over who hated him more. For snack time, Sister Pat passed out grapes. After we ate our fill, Sister Makumbu gave us a lesson on the California grapes that we had just eaten and how the migrant workers who picked them had to fight for their rights. I don't think the lesson went the way Sister Makumbu had planned. Everyone felt badly for having eaten the grapes. The room was quiet. Then Sister Makumbu announced free time for the next hour. All the kids went wild at the prospect of running around in the park for an hour, but Fern and I didn't feel like running with them. Sister Pat had classes at her college and had to leave. When all the kids except Fern and I read out to the park, I asked Sister Makumbu if she had any chores or if she needed help in the classroom. Not that I wanted her embarrassing me, having me stand up front and rotate around the sun. It just felt strange, my Timex ticking and me having nothing to do. If only I'd thought to bring my book with me. A lot of good Island of the Blue Dolphins did me snug inside my pillowcase. Sister Makumbu rose immediately. She had just the thing to keep me busy until the class came together for arts and crafts. She asked Fern and me to count the Black Panther Weekly newspapers, stacking them crisscross every 50 copies. She said the older kids would take them to local stores or sell the papers themselves. She made it sound like we were doing a great service by helping the newspaper carriers become more organized and accountable. It just gave me something to do and Fern a reason to stick with me. Poor Fern. She didn't have the knack for counting. She was still angry and heartbroken about Miss Patty Cake. She couldn't get past 20 copies without losing her place and had to start over again and again. My stack of papers grew while she had yet to count out her first 50. "Can't we just go to the park and play?" she asked. I was tempted to let her go, but said, "Come on, Fern, we have to get this done. All you have to do is count out 10 and lay them this way. Then count another 10 and lay them that way." I felt Sister Makumbu watching as I showed Fern the shortcut. You know when someone's eyes are on your back, and whether it's in a good or a bad way. I felt her watching us in a good way. Soon Fern caught on, counting and crisscrossing. Her stack of papers began to grow. Not as high as mine, but it grew. Fern was now busy and not missing Miss Patty Cake for the moment. After a short while, I felt Sister Makumbu's eyes leave us. She must have figured we were all right and had continued doing her own work. Since the Black Panther newspaper cost a quarter, I told myself I'd only skim the front and back pages as I stacked the papers. I would read what I could see. I knew if I flipped a page over and read it line by line, I was officially reading someone else's paper, or as Pa would call it, stealing. I skimmed the front page of every 5 copies. I got into a real rhythm, counting and reading a few key words at a time. There was more artwork than printing on the front page, so I couldn't read much. One thing was for sure, I'd know Huey Newton if I ever saw him on the street. You couldn't help but see Huey Newton all over the newspaper. His face was cocked slightly in the upper corner of the paper like the president's face on a dollar bill. Now the Black Panther leader was in prison where he belonged, according to Big Ma. As I counted, I dug Huey's corner picture, him wearing his beret looking cool and revolutionary. I flipped open a newspaper quickly, skimmed the article in 5-second glances at a time, then flipped it closed. The article was about Huey talking about Bobby. There was also a photograph of people protesting that I wanted to get a better look at. They were people carrying the same kind of signs that we had colored in. Those could have been our signs. We were probably part of the revolution. Wouldn't that make a fine classroom essay? My revolutionary summer? I wanted to read the newspaper, not skim. Not steal. I wanted to fold a paper over, sit back, and read every word. I must have lost count. I was too busy imagining a Black Panther carrying our Free Huey sign. Too busy to notice my neat stack had grown into uneven bundles with either more than 50 or less than 50 newspapers. Sister Delphine? Sister Makumbu stood before me with a smile on her face. "Nuts," Fern said, because Sister Makumbu's voice had startled her, making her lose count. She began to recount. "Yes, Sister Makumbu," I answered weakly. I hadn't even heard her get up from her chair or felt her eyes on my back. It wasn't like me to get lost like that.
"Do you want to read a newspaper?"
And embarrassed. I'm not the kind to be embarrassed. Thank goodness she was a teacher and not some boy who could read the thoughts spinning in my head. I nodded my yes, which only felt worse since I was not a nodder. I dug out my 2 dimes from last night's change. "I'll bring a nickel tomorrow," I said. She smiled and said,
20 cents will be fine, Sister Delphine. You're entitled to the workers' discount."
I was too embarrassed to say thank you and gave her another nod. I took my newspaper and folded it twice to read about Huey, Bobby, and the protesters later. Now, instead of having two of the 10 dimes needed to call Pa and Big Ma, we were back to having no dimes. Fern and I kept counting and stacking. Big Red S. That night, Fern complained about her aching stomach. She meowed and howled and turned in her sleep. "Go sit on the toilet," I told her. She clung to my side, meowing and howling. Vonetta yelled, "Quit it, Fern. I can't sleep." I paid her no mind, and neither did Fern. If Fern couldn't sleep, then we all couldn't sleep. So too bad for Vonetta and too bad for me. I just let Fern carry on while I rubbed her stomach. It took a while, but she finally fell into sleep. Before we left for the center in the morning, I asked Cecile for food money for tonight's dinner. If I could hold on to $200 over 3,000 miles, I could hold on to a $10 bill for a few hours. Cecile didn't bother with any questions. She just gave me the $10 bill and a door key so she wouldn't have to get up and let us in. I think anyone standing at the front door made her jumpy. Even when we ate on the floor in the living room, I'd catch her eyes shift to the door when she heard a noise. Maybe she thought the Panthers were coming back to bother her for more ink and paper. I was glad Cecile handed over the money without fuss or questions. That saved me from lying about getting shrimp lo mein when I had no intention of going to Ming's. Vonetta, Fern, and I had eaten our last plate of shrimp lo mein and egg rolls for the rest of our crazy summer. Shrimp and noodles swimming in sauce and deep-fried egg rolls had taken their toll on us. Not that mean Lady Ming would cry for her three colored girls. She had other customers to yell at. All day long at the center, I could think of nothing else but a home-cooked meal. We marched to the Safeway store after playing in the park for an hour. My shopping list was burned into my brain. I picked up one head of cabbage, 17 cents, one onion, 8 cents, two potatoes, 23 cents, one package of chicken thighs and one package of wings, $1.47. The price of the chicken would have been thievery of the highest kind, according to Big Ma, who raised chickens down in Alabama and had only to go pull one up by its neck, kill it, pluck it, clean it, and fry it. Lastly, but most important, I dropped a can of stewed prunes into our shopping basket. 49 cents. There was plenty of money left over to call Pa and talk for as long as we wanted. Vonetta and Fern pouted as the groceries went into the basket. There were even a couple of, "Aw, shucks," and finger-snapping as our dinner was placed on the cashier's counter. All the sniping between Vonetta and Fern over Miss Patty Cake was now aimed at their new enemies, the real food that we would eat until we returned to Brooklyn, and me. I paid for the groceries and put the change in my pocket. I give Cecile the dollar bills and keep the coins for our telephone call to Papa. "Why can't we have pizza?" Vonetta moaned. "Or shrimp lo mein?" "Because," I said, enjoying my role as their enemy and big sister. "That's not food for everyday eating." I held up the brown paper Safeway bag with its big red S printed smack in the center. "This is..." Big Ma would have been proud of me, but also angry that I allowed it to come to this. I'm sure she expected this kind of living from Cecile. From me, she expected better. "Phooey. Double phooey." They could phooey all night long for all I cared. Vonetta said, "I hope you know she won't let you cook that." "Not in her kitchen," Fern said. So I said, "Then she'll cook it in her kitchen." Papa's voice poured out of my mouth like warm, steady tap water.
When I put the key in the door, I said, "Go wash your face and hands real good. Play go fish until I call you for supper." Cecile wasn't in the living room, which meant she was in her kitchen. I didn't want Vonetta and Fern to see how afraid I was of Cecile. I thought of how she planted her body between us and her kitchen door, daring us to take a step farther. That she'd rather let Fern dry up of thirst than give her a glass of water with ice. I thought about how crazy Cecile was, and that I didn't know her or what she would do next. Now that I could smell the cabbage and onion from the brown paper bag, I lost that feeling of being calm and brave like Papa. I didn't dare walk in, so I called to her. "Cecile?" It didn't occur to me to use her poet name, Uzila, to maybe soften her up. But that name didn't feel right coming out of my mouth. I dreaded this moment. Dreaded the thought of her swinging the kitchen door open and her seeing me with a bag of uncooked food. There was no putting it off. I called to her again, this time louder. "Cecile!" Her hand slapped against the counter or tabletop good and hard. In a few stomps, the door swung open and she was looking down at me. I took a step back and hugged the bag. "I have to cook supper." She stared down at me and didn't speak. I didn't know what to do or say, so I took the change out of my pocket, all of it, and held it out to her. She took it, dropped it into her pants pocket, maintained her long, hard stare. If that was supposed to make me feel afraid, stupid, and small, it worked. Then she spoke. "Why don't you go to Ming's or Shabazz?" "We have a Shabazz in Brooklyn, the fish and bean pie place run by the Black Muslims." I found my voice and said, "We can't eat takeout every day. Vonetta and Fern can't stomach it." "You can't come in my kitchen making a mess. This is my workplace. I don't need you in here turning things upside down." I said, "I don't make messes without a lick of sass." I spoke the plain truth. I'd never made a mess in my life, not even for the fun of it. Cecile went stomping and cursing back into the kitchen. "No one told y'all to come out here. No one wants you out here making a mess, stopping my work." I stood outside the kitchen with the Safeway bag held tight to my chest. I'm sure the Safeway S was in the same spot as Superman's big red S was sewn to his costume. I felt right about looking out for my sisters, but I didn't feel brave. All the same, I didn't want Vonetta and Fern to see me standing there like a scared dummy holding a bag of groceries. Cecile pushed the door open. "Get a speck of grease on my work? You hear?" I knew better than to wait for a nicer invitation and walked inside Cecile's kitchen. It was larger than our kitchen back home. Hers had both the cooking area and an eating area, which hadn't been set up for eating. There was a long table, only one chair, hers, and what I figured was her printing machine on top of the table. I didn't want to be caught gawking at her and her stuff. I went straight to the sink and started stripping the onion, washing the cabbage, washing potatoes, washing the chicken parts until I could figure out what to do next without having to ask Cecile a thing. She hovered over her machinery, grunting and cursing. Then she got up, pulled open a drawer, and threw a potato peeler and a knife in the sink. The knife just missed my hand. She didn't look once but said, "Don't go cutting off your fingers. There's no money to take you to the hospital." I felt her watching me at work. Thanks to Big Ma, I could skin a potato with a paring knife without wasting a scrap of white potato. I could cut up a whole fryer, too, even though this time I didn't have to. Cecile grunted. "What you gonna do to that chicken?" I said, "Bake it." "Frying's faster," she said. I pointed to her papers. "Grease."
Papa's easy voice just slid right out of me, warm and steady. I could feel myself coming back. My voice. My steadiness. What you gonna do with the potatoes? Boil them with the cabbage and onion. There was something about being here with her in the kitchen. And I knew what it was. I had a flash of us. Quiet and in the kitchen. Pencil tapping and her voice chanting. I blinked that flash away. I didn't have time to be pulled into a daydream. I kept doing what I was doing. And then I pressed my luck and asked her for some fatback. Another grunt. No fatback. No salt pork. No pig of any kind in my kitchen. I shook my head. People in Oakland were touchy about pigs. They were touchy about the pig on their plates and the pigs, as Crazy Kelvin called them, in police cars. Back in Brooklyn,